Details of a sunset. The last streetcar was disappearing in the mirror-like murk of the street, and along the wire above it, a spark of Bengal light, crackling and quivering, sped into the distance like a blue star.
Well, might as well just plod along, even though you are pretty drunk, Mark. Pretty drunk.
The spark went out. The roofs glistened in the moonlight, silvery angles broken by oblique black cracks. Through this mirrory darkness he staggered home. Mark Standfuss, a sales clerk, a demigod, fair-haired Mark, a lucky fellow with a high starched collar. At the back of his neck, above the white line of that collar, his hair ended in a funny, boyish little tag that had escaped the barber's scissors. That little tag was what made Clara fall in love with him. And she swore that it was true love, that she had quite forgotten the handsome, ruined foreigner who last year had rented a room from her mother, Frau Heise. And yet, Mark, you're drunk. That evening there had been beer and songs with friends in honor of Mark and russet-haired, pale Clara, and in a week they would be married. Then there would be a lifetime of bliss and peace and of nights with her, the red blaze of her hair spreading all over the pillow, and in the morning, again her quiet laughter, the green dress, the coolness of her bare arms. In the middle of a square stood a black wigwam. The tram tracks were being repaired. He remembered how today he had got under her short sleeve and kissed the touching scar from her smallpox vaccination. And now he was walking home, unsteady on his feet from too much happiness and too much drink, swinging his slender cane, and among the dark houses on the opposite side of the empty street, a night echo clop-clopped in time with his footfalls, but grew silent when he turned at the corner, where the same man as always, in apron and peaked cap, stood by his grill selling frankfurters, crying out in a tender and sad bird-like whistle, "Würstchen! Würstchen!" Mark felt a sort of delicious pity for the frankfurters, the moon, the blue spark that had receded along the wire, and, as he tensed his body against the friendly fence, he was overcome with laughter, and, bending, exhaled into a little round hole in the boards the words, "Clara! Clara! Oh, my darling!" On the other side of the fence, in a gap between the buildings, was a rectangular vacant lot. Several moving vans stood there like enormous coffins. They were bloated from their loads. Heaven knows what was piled inside them. Oakwood trunks, probably, and chandeliers like iron spiders, and the heavy skeleton of a double bed. The moon cast a hard glare on the vans. To the left of the lot, huge black hearts were flattened against a bare rear wall. The shadows, many times magnified, of the leaves of a linden tree that stood next to a street lamp on the edge of the sidewalk. Mark was still chuckling as he climbed the dark stairs to his floor. He reached the final step, but mistakenly raised his foot again, and it came down awkwardly with a bang. While he was groping in the dark in search of the keyhole, his bamboo cane slipped out from under his arm and, with a subdued little clatter, slid down the staircase. Mark held his breath. He thought the cane would turn with the stairs and knock its way down to the bottom. But the high-pitched wooden click abruptly ceased. Must have stopped. He grinned with relief and, holding on to the banister, the beer singing in his hollow head, started to descend again. He nearly fell and sat down heavily on a step as he groped around with his hands. Upstairs the door onto the landing opened. Frau Standfuss, with a kerosene lamp in her hand, half-dressed, eyes blinking, the haze of her hair showing from beneath her nightcap, came out and called, "Is that you, Mark?" A yellow wedge of light encompassed the banisters, the stairs, and his cane, and Mark, panting and pleased, climbed up again to the landing, and his black, hunched-backed shadow followed him up along the wall. Then, in the dimly lit room, divided by a red screen, the following conversation took place.
"You've had too much to drink, Mark."
"No, no, Mother, I'm so happy."
"You've got yourself all dirty, Mark. Your hand is black."
"So very happy."
"Ah, that feels good.
Water is nice and cold. Pour some on the top of my head. More. Everybody congratulated me, and with good reason. Pour some more on. But they say she was in love with somebody else such a short time ago. A foreign adventurer of some kind, left without paying 5 marks he owed Frau Heise. Oh, stop, you don't understand anything. We did such a lot of singing today. Look, I've lost a button. I think they'll double my salary when I get married. Come on, go to bed. You're all dirty in your new pants, too.
That night, Mark had an unpleasant dream. He saw his late father. His father came up to him with an odd smile on his pale, sweaty face, seized Mark under the arms, and began to tickle him silently, violently, and relentlessly. He only remembered that dream after he had arrived at the store where he worked, and he remembered it because a friend of his, Jolly Adolf, poked him in the ribs. For one instant, something flew open in his soul, momentarily froze still in surprise, and slammed shut. Then again everything became easy and limpid, and the neckties he offered his customers smiled brightly, in sympathy with his happiness. He knew he would see Clara that evening. He would only run home for dinner, then go straight to her house. The other day, when he was telling her how cozily and tenderly they would live, she had suddenly burst into tears. Of course, Mark had understood that these were tears of joy, as she herself explained. She began whirling about the room, her skirt like a green sail, and then she started rapidly smoothing her glossy hair, the color of apricot jam, in front of the mirror. And her face was pale and bewildered, also from happiness, of course. It was all so natural, after all.
A striped one?
Why, certainly. He knotted the tie on his hand and turned it this way and that, enticing the customer. Nimbly he opened the flat cardboard boxes. Meanwhile his mother had a visitor, Frau Heise. She had come without warning, and her face was tear-stained. Gingerly, almost as if she were afraid of breaking into pieces, she lowered herself onto a stool in the tiny, spotless kitchen where Frau Stanfuss was washing the dishes. A two-dimensional wooden pig hung on the wall, and a half-open matchbox with one burnt match lay on the stove.
"I have come to you with bad news, Frau Stanfuss."
The other woman froze, clutching a plate to her chest.
"It's about Clara. Yes, she has lost her senses. That lodger of mine came back today. You know, the one I told you about. And Clara has gone mad. Yes, it all happened this morning. She never wants to see your son again. You gave her the material for a new dress. It will be returned to you. And here is a letter from Mark. Clara's gone mad. I don't know what to think."
Meanwhile, Mark had finished work and was already on his way home. Krukat Adolf walked him all the way to his house. They both stopped, shook hands, and Mark gave a shove with his shoulder to the door, which opened into cool emptiness.
"Why go home? The heck with it. Let's have a bite somewhere, you and I."
Adolf stood, propping himself on his cane as if it were a tail.
"The heck with it, Mark."
Mark gave his cheek an irresolute rub, then laughed.
"All right. Only it's my treat."
When, half an hour later, he came out of the pub and said goodbye to his friend, the flush of a fiery sunset filled the vista of the canal, and a rain-streaked bridge in the distance was margined by a narrow rim of gold along which passed tiny black figures. He glanced at his watch and decided to go straight to his fiancée's without stopping at his mother's. His happiness and the limpidity of the evening air made his head spin a little. An arrow of bright copper struck the lacquered shoe of a fop jumping out of a car. The puddles, which still had not dried, surrounded by the bruise of a dark damp, the live eyes of the asphalt, reflected the soft incandescence of the evening. The houses were as gray as ever. Yet the roofs, the moldings above the upper floors, the gilt-edged lightning rods, the stone cupolas, the colonnettes,
which nobody notices during the day, for day people seldom look up, were now bathed in rich ochre, the sunset's airy warmth, and thus they seemed unexpected and magical. Those upper protrusions, balconies, cornices, pillars, contrasting sharply because of their tawny brilliance with the drab facades beneath. How happy I am, Mark kept musing. How everything around celebrates my happiness. As he sat in the tram, he tenderly, lovingly examined his fellow passengers. He had such a young face, had Mark, with pink pimples on the chin, glad, luminous eyes, an untrimmed tag at the hollow of his nape. One would think fate might have spared him. In a few moments I'll see Clara, he thought. She'll meet me at the door. She'll say she barely survived until evening. He gave a start. He had missed the stop where he should have got off. On the way to the exit, he tripped over the feet of a fat gentleman who was reading a medical journal. Mark wanted to tip his hat, but nearly fell. The streetcar was turning with a screech. He grabbed an overhead strap and managed to keep his balance. The man slowly retracted his short legs with a phlegmy and cross growl. He had a gray mustache which twisted up pugnaciously. Mark gave him a guilty smile and reached the front end of the car. He grasped the iron handrails with both hands, leaned forward, calculated his jump. Down below, the asphalt streamed past, smooth and glistening. Mark jumped. There was a burn of friction against his soles, and his legs started running by themselves, his feet stamping with involuntary resonance. Several odd things occurred simultaneously. From the front of the car, as it swayed away from Mark, the conductor emitted a furious shout. The shiny asphalt swept upward like the seat of a swing. A roaring mass hit Mark from behind. He felt as if a thick thunderbolt had gone through him from head to toe, and then nothing. He was standing alone on the glossy asphalt. He looked around. He saw at a distance his own figure, the slender back of Mark Stanfuss, who was walking diagonally across the street as if nothing had happened. Marveling, he caught up with himself in one easy sweep, and now it was he nearing the sidewalk, his entire frame filled with a gradually diminishing vibration. That was stupid. Almost got run over by a bus. The street was wide and gay. The colors of the sunset had invaded half of the sky. Upper stories and roofs were bathed in glorious light. Up there, Mark could discern translucent porticos, friezes and frescoes, trellises covered with orange roses, winged statues that lifted skyward, golden, unbearably blazing lyres. In bright undulations, ethereally, festively, these architectonic enchantments were receding into the heavenly distance, and Mark could not understand how he had never noticed before those galleries, those temples suspended on high. He banged his knee painfully. That black fence again. He could not help laughing as he recognized the vans beyond. There they stood like gigantic coffins. Whatever might they conceal within? Treasures? The skeletons of giants? Or dusty mountains of sumptuous furniture? Oh, I must have a look. Or else Clara will ask, and I shan't know. He gave a quick nudge to the door of one of the vans and went inside. Empty. Empty except for one little straw chair in the center, comically poised askew on three legs. Mark shrugged and went out on the opposite side. Once again the hot evening glow gushed into sight. And now in front of him was the familiar wrought-iron wicket, and further on, Clara's window, crossed by a green branch. Clara herself opened the gate, and stood waiting, lifting her bared elbows, adjusting her hair. The russet tufts of her armpits showed through the sunlit openings of her short sleeves. Mark, laughing noiselessly, ran up to embrace her. He pressed his cheek against the warm green silk of her dress. Her hands came to rest on his head. I was so lonely all day, Mark. But now you are here. She opened the door, and Mark immediately found himself in the dining room,
which struck him as being inordinately spacious and bright.
"When people are as happy as we are now," she said, "they can do without a hallway."
Clara spoke in a passionate whisper, and he felt that her words had some special, wonderful meaning. And in the dining room, around the snow-white oval of the tablecloth, sat a number of people, none of whom Mark had seen before at his fiancée's house. Among them was Adolf, swarthy with his square-shaped head. There was also that short-legged, big-bellied old man who had been reading a medical journal in the tram and was still grumbling. Mark greeted the company with a shy nod and sat down beside Clara, and in that same instant felt, as he had a short time ago, a bolt of atrocious pain pass through his whole frame. He writhed, and Clara's green dress floated away, diminished, and turned into the green shade of a lamp. The lamp was swaying on its cord. Mark was lying beneath it, with that inconceivable pain crushing his body, and nothing could be distinguished save that oscillating lamp, and his ribs were pressing against his heart, making it impossible to breathe, and someone was bending his leg, straining to break it. In a moment, it would crack. He freed himself somehow. The lamp glowed green again, and Mark saw himself sitting a little way off beside Clara, and no sooner had he seen it than he found himself brushing his knee against her warm silk skirt. And Clara was laughing, her head thrown back. He felt an urge to tell her about what had just happened, and, addressing all those present, Jolly Adolf, the irritable fat man, uttered with an effort, "The foreigner is offering the aforementioned prayers on the river." It seemed to him that he had made everything clear, and apparently they had all understood. Clara, with a little pout, pinched his cheek.
"My poor darling, it'll be all right."
He began to feel tired and sleepy. He put his arm around Clara's neck, drew her to him, and lay back. And then the pain pounced upon him again, and everything became clear. Mark was lying supine, mutilated and bandaged, and the lamp was not swinging any longer. The familiar fat man with the mustache, now a doctor in a white gown, made worried, growling, small noises as he peered into the pupils of Mark's eyes.
And what pain! God, in a moment his heart would be impaled on a rib and burst. God, any instant now! This is silly. Why isn't Clara here?
The doctor frowned and clucked his tongue. Mark no longer breathed. Mark had departed. Whither? Into what other dreams? None can tell.